Today's the power hour. We're either going to do 2 hours or until we run out of questions, whichever one happens first. And right now is your chance. Calls are starting to come in. There's still room for questions. If you have anything at all, press one on your phone right now and you'll get through. The longer you wait, the worse your odds become. Let's get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. Today is the Power Hour. I've got the team from Pittsburgh Power with me. John and Ethan will be answering your questions. We'll take your calls and answer your questions about everything maintenance, engines, performance, fuel mileage, modifications, upgrades, troubleshooting, electrical, fuel mileage, you name it, we'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and ask the question. We're going to get to those questions in just a little bit. John, Ethan, welcome back, guys.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Good. Before we get to what you guys have today, I've got a question about Jake brakes. First off, I just want to make sure that I've got my basics correct. On the traditional Jake brake, a three-stage would mean stage one, we activate two cylinders, stage two, four cylinders, and stage three, six cylinders, right?
Precisely, yep.
Okay. So I had a question over the weekend on the MX engine, and I had to go do some research, so I read through the manuals. It looks to me like on this three-stage, stage one is three cylinders, stage two is six cylinders, and stage three activates a secondary exhaust brake. Is that correct?
Absolutely. The MX may actually have, I know there's a butterfly in the exhaust outlet on the turbo on that it may use as an exhaust brake, but the Cummins works in a similar manner also. It's three cylinders, six cylinders, and then six cylinders plus the VG turbo pinch the whole way off.
I think that's what it looked like to me, that it was on the turbo that they were closing it off. So here was the question. The caller claims that the third stage does absolutely nothing. He's tried it over and over and over, go from second to third and no change whatsoever. He's been in multiple dealers multiple times. They all say no codes, everything's working correctly, but they won't get in the truck and go ride with him so he can show them.
Okay. Yeah, that's what we do. So it could be, you know, if that actuator on it, I think that I'm pretty sure the MX does use that butterfly valve at the back of the turbo. You know, unless there's a position sensor on there, which I'm sure there isn't, I don't think the computer would know if that was opened or closed. And okay. It would never set a code. So I think it'd probably be worth his while to stop by here and let us figure it out.
That was my first, he runs West Coast only, and he just never gets anywhere near. And I think the farthest east he ever gets is around Denver. I think he's out of Salt Lake City. He gets to Denver. I said, you know, I talked to you guys. You have a remote tuning location, somebody that get it. Or although if it's not a code issue, you know, you're not going to be able to see anything remotely.
Yeah, if that actuator hasn't got feedback on it, it's not going to set a code. And if it was the VG, I know the Cummins would set a code.
Cummins will set a code if the VG doesn't clamp the whole way off.
And the Cummins is interesting. You'll see a spike in boost pressure also. So when you flip the three, you'll see the boost go up as well as feel the thing hold back a little bit better. But with the butterfly at the exit of the turbo, I think you'd probably see the opposite. I think you'd probably see less boost. I bet if you watched the boost gauge closely and took it for a ride, you'd know if it was working or not.
Oh, that's an interesting point. Yeah, he's totally frustrated with it.
Mm-hmm. But it may be a simple problem. I mean, it could be the little airline out there or something. It's air actuated. It's got a solenoid valve that opens and closes it. So, you know, it should be pretty solvable.
That's what I thought. I mean, and when I was talking to him, I didn't really understand that system. I hadn't seen that before, but I went and looked at all the manuals and kind of followed what was going on. And once I saw that, I thought, this doesn't look like it should be all that complicated.
Yeah, you'll see that with all the modern trucks, Kevin. Like even the Detroit, right, with the VG Detroits would use the
yep.
Jake also. Or I mean the turbo. So it'll pinch off the vanes in the turbo at, you know, with the third stage.
Got it. All right. Well, I learned something this week then. That's always a good thing.
Always learning, man.
That's right. All right. So what's going on with you guys this week?
Not a whole lot. I don't know. What are you seeing, Ethan? I've got... I've been doing more paperwork and engineering work and a lot of stuff at my desk and getting caught up on the Dorothy project. So I've kind of been nose to the grindstone to all that. So I personally have nothing new for you that I could think of.
The shop's full of a whole bunch of rebuilds. The engineering department only had a few little problems to solve. We've been catching up on some other little things and a few projects we wanted to look at.
But yeah, I've got no news for you. I haven't even been... keeping up on my my reading either. I don't have any news from the autonomous world or anything. I've not followed anything recently.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of been my week. I've been just working, head down. So I haven't really looked at a lot of new stuff. Honestly, the autonomous, it would be a full-time job to keep up with it right now. I scan the headlines is about all I really have had time for the last couple of weeks, and it is everywhere. I mean, it seems to be all anybody is talking about in the news right now as far as, you know, automotive or trucking. I see headline after headline after headline, new companies, new technology, new regulations. It's just kind of crazy. You know, I don't know if we've talked about this on this show. I talk a lot about it on Broker Connect. Uber is, you know, getting heavily into transportation in, you know, everything from taxis to trucks. And they bought Otto. They've dropped that name, by the way. So there's longer. Yeah, they dropped the name. And they haven't really given it a name, the division within Uber. And I think I know why. Uber is big now into freight brokering. So it's interesting that in the last 3 years, I have been approached by at least 20 new startup technology companies. And they, every time they walk up to me, call me, send me an email, they say the same thing. We're going to be the Uber of trucking. I thought, oh, well, how original is that? You know, and what they're trying to do, people are trying to create an app or a technology that connects the shipper directly to the carrier and bypasses the broker, because we've done it in so many other industries. You know, stockbrokers are almost non-existent these days. Travel agents are almost completely gone. It's all technology.
Yeah, it's the app-based economy now. I'm guilty of it. I mean, I deal with whoever has the best app.
Me too. Yeah. And so people have been trying for a very long time to get technology to replace the freight broker, kind of the way Uber replaced the taxi cab companies. You know, the company's gone. Now we just have a rider and a driver. That's it. And in trucking, it's kind of interesting because everybody kept saying we're going to be the Uber of trucking. And then all of a sudden, Uber got into the game. So, but it's what's funny is Uber wasn't even able to accomplish this. Uber did not replace the freight broker with their technology. Uber is now a freight broker. They just have better technology than all the other freight brokers. They have a very cool app, and they've solved some of the problems around payment and negotiations and some other things. But here's the interesting part, and I think this is why they dropped Otto and they're not really giving their autonomous division a name. I think they're quietly, I don't think they want to make a big deal about it. I went on the air and said, look, guys, you know, Uber's making a big push for you to use their freight brokerage. But do you really want to support a company that's also trying to replace you as the driver?
Well, just think of the data mining they're doing right now with that.
Yeah.
So that's all going to feed into, you know, what they're doing with the on the autonomous end as well. Have you followed at all what a complete and total cluster that company is? Like it's a mess.
They are a mess. Yeah.
And despite themselves, they're incredibly successful. I mean, the CEO has kind of got to step aside. They've got, you know, numerous different investigations going on, and they continue. It doesn't seem to affect them business-wise. It's unbelievable what's going on there. So that could be part of the reason they're being quiet right now too. Who knows how it's going to shake out, or what they'll, you know, what'll happen in the end. I'm sure it'll continue to be successful, but it's just amazing that you know, despite themselves, they're moving along and doing quite well.
Yeah, you know, I think they've grown so fast. They've got so much money. It is a mess. I've seen the same thing, but you know, I look at it and say, wow, you know, you put all these people in business in the on the taxi side, which I love. It's a cool technology. I love using it. It's great for the people doing it. But at the same time, they're already working to replace all those people with their autonomous cabs.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yep.
And they're going to do the same thing in trucking. So honestly, I wouldn't support them. If I were in the industry right now, as cool as their technology is, there are other brokerages and companies that are coming very, very close. Truckstop.com has a lot of the same stuff. We'll be right back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got John and Ethan with me from Pittsburgh Power. And John, you and I could probably talk about that kind of stuff all day, but what do you say we get to some phone calls and talk about trucks?
Sounds good. Let's do that.
All right. Let's start off right there in Pennsylvania. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kevin. Hope you can hear me. I'm just heading into a bad cell area. Hey, I wanted to tell you that I called you last fall and talked to you about a 318 Detroit engine. Of course, you asked me what I was messing with. I had a 318. I told you I was restoring a old truck for my dad. Well, I wanted to let you know that we gave it to him on Father's Day. And it couldn't have went any better. I thought Bruce was going to be on the program today because I emailed Bruce pictures of the truck and a video of dad riding in the truck. I emailed him this morning, and so I was hoping maybe he'd gotten that email by now. But it went really well. Two of the news stations in Erie, Pennsylvania came down and filmed it all, so it was on the news and everything. And it was just a good day. And I was wondering, is there anywhere that I can like post the pictures and the video like on your page so that maybe your listeners can see it?
Yeah. Yeah, send them, send all the stuff to support@letstruck.com.
support@letstruck.com. Okay.
Yeah, and yeah, they'll get it to me and I'll put it up on my page. I have to keep my page, you know, you can't post on my page if I did. There's 100 things on there every day.
Okay. Well, thank you.
And I'll put it up.
Well, thank you. I just wanted to let you know we got it done and that we gave it to him. And I'll send you the pics and stuff at support@letstruck.com, right?
Yep. That'll get it here.
All right. Thanks, Kevin.
All right. You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Boy, that's pretty cool. What do you think, guys?
That's really cool. Yeah, that's neat.
Yeah.
I remember that one from
I do. I remember when he called, yep.
Yeah, restore an old truck like that, give it to him on Father's Day, got the news down there. How awesome.
So hey, anybody, since Bruce isn't the most connected person, feel free to email me. I'm easyjohn@pittsburghpower.com. So a tidbit like that, I'd love to see.
Yeah. So just to clarify that, the email address isn't easyjohn@pittsburgh.com. That's what it sounded like. It's hit it to him. It's just john@pittsburgh.com. Yeah, there we go. All right. We're going to head off to Tennessee. Art, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you doing today?
Good. What's on your mind?
Good. How are you?
Yes. Good. With that MX motor, that's what it does do. When I turn it, I have the same thing with the MX-13. You put your engine brake on and it does do something with the turbo, and I do have more turbo boost. I've noticed that when I'm letting off, coming down the hills or whatever. But anyways, so I'm sorry.
Do you feel it hold a little better when you go to stage three then too?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can feel it. Yeah.
Okay.
You can definitely feel it. I mean, I can come down, I'm going down like Mount Eagle, which is pretty steep, and I can leave it right in eighth gear and just let it go, and it'll stay at 40 miles an hour or whatever you want to all the way down.
Terrific.
Yeah, well, that's got to be, the combination of the two is probably nice, but on the Mercedes engine, when they only had the exhaust brake, that thing was just pathetic.
Yeah.
It did almost nothing.
Yeah, I drove one of those before, and it works okay. It's just that it won't stop you. I mean, it kicks off way too early. It kicks off about 1,200, which you really needed to go down to about 800, but then it probably stalled out.
Big difference. Not much stopping power with those.
Yeah. Well, one of the reasons why I called, I'm the guy that I called. I got the Kenworth from hell. I'm the third time caller here, and my check engine light's been going off and on, off and on. It'll sit in idle, and then it'll come on, and then I go down the road, and it'll work. It'll go up, back off again and come on. And I noticed one time it was, I had to idle because my APU was something wrong with it. I got to get it serviced. And I noticed that it said not to start my drive. It was going to try to do a manual regen for 10 minutes, and it wouldn't work. And at that time, and I went down the road and actually was on Mount Eagle, came down and just blew black smoke and everything out back. It looked like my brakes were on fire. But anyways, that cleared up there. And the next time it did have a check engine light on, and it did regen itself. And ever since then, it just flickers off and on. It'll go on for 5 minutes and come back off, or stay on for a couple hours and go back off. But one of the reasons I'm calling is I called John last week, and I know he's been really, really busy. It's just that I got to get up there to Pittsburgh Power and have him clean the DPF and get this thing tuned up here, because make it run a little bit, because it's kind of doggy in the hills for between 1,200 and stuff. So
okay, yeah, you'll definitely get it in here. So yeah. It's sounds like we need to do, how many miles are on it?
600,000.
Okay,
I'm probably gonna do the DPF on it.
Yeah, we ought to do a full, full after treatment maintenance on it.
Right. And I'm just going to have you, when you get those Dorothy things going later on or wherever, I'll throw one of those things on.
Yeah, I've got one on an MX now. It's working pretty well. So that would be,
okay.
I could actually use another one. When I did the one that I did in the past here, we didn't do a master kit on it. I'm actually not sure I was real happy with the installation of it. But, if you'd want to, maybe in the next month or two, give me a call and we could get you in here and do a week. I could use yours to build the master off of.
Okay. What I'm going to do is I want to take and have you do the tuning on it so I can get this thing run a little bit better. I mean,
okay. We're still struggling with that a little bit. I'll be honest with you. We're not quite there yet with the, with our, PACCAR tuning. So that's, we're working on it. We've got some things that we need to do there yet. Communication software issues and some other stuff that we're not quite there with.
Maybe you could just tweak it up a little bit just and then come back later on and you could just do a full afterburner special on it.
For sure. Okay.
Yeah, because I know it definitely 1400, it runs really great. I mean, it pulls good. It's just down the lower part. You just let it stay in manual. It's a manual or a automated, I should say.
Yeah, automated shift.
Man, it runs. It runs. It runs pretty good. I mean, I'm getting pretty. Just sometimes anywhere's between 8 8 or 8.5 miles a gallon, and sometimes as low as 5. So I don't know. I'm using a scan gauge. I don't know if that's that does work very well, but you know, that's the average on it. It'll do it. So
okay.
But other than that, yeah, I'll try to get up there. Would it be possible if I can call you like a day or two? Because when I get up in Pennsylvania for another load.
Yeah, if you could give me more than that, that'd be great, especially if we're going to do the Dorothy installation on it. So, yeah, I'd like a little more heads up than that.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, okay, sounds like a plan. We're going to head off to Arizona. Alex, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Good. What's on your mind?
Okay, I've got a little bit of a problem here. I got a 3406E. It's got 105,000 miles on a gold overhaul, and I have a Pittsburgh Power manifold has a mystery fluid coming out of it that I believe to be oil, but I'm not sure. I've got it in the shop right now. They don't really want to tear into it. This is the same shop that did the overhaul. They're telling me they think it's just fuel slobber, but they can't confirm whether or not it's fuel or oil so far.
I'm going to go with it.
There's a, go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, I'll get you a finish up. I'm sorry.
Well, I was wondering if there is an easier way to test that to tell if it's fuel or oil. And if it tends to only build up after idle time, burning it off going down the road and building up while it's sitting. Idle time's fairly low, pretty limited. I do idle it. It is summertime, but at this point, I can't tell what that fluid is. I think it's oil, but I'm not sure.
I'm going to go with your shop and say it's fuel slobber. The press fit on that manifold is pretty tight. It's I don't think oil is going to make its way through there. And again, it's indicative of idle time too. You're not going to get it going down the road just when the thing's idling or cold. It could be an injector. Or just the tuning on it, where the timing is on the engine. What I would do, if you're concerned about it, is I'd pull the manifold off, plug off the oil line for the turbo, and start it up with the manifold off. And you're going to just let it idle for a couple of minutes like that, and then turn it back off. And you're going to see one of the exhaust ports is going to be wet with fuel if you've got an injector overfueling. And then what I'd do then is either check the setting on the injector or replace that injector or both.
All right, so pull the manifold off and get them to look at it.
Yep, yeah, and then run it. Run it with the manifold off.
All right, thank you guys very much.
Hold that thought. We're going to get to a break. We're going to be right back. Stick around. We've got more stuff. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got John and Ethan with me from Pittsburgh Power. John, you know, anytime I've tried to help somebody with this issue, we see this a lot, and it, you know, it looks like oil. It's really just fuel and soot. We almost always can see an increase in the fuel dilution in the oil sample. So if he's doing oil samples and there's been an increase in fuel, that would be another clue.
Yeah, he'll see that for sure there. And again, the easiest way to pin it down, you know, rather than any fancy computer test or anything, just pull the manifold off and run it for a while, and you'll see which exhaust port's wet when you're done. It's a no-brainer. Pretty easy one to fix there. It's kind of funny. People fuss about that so much more now. Back, I'll sound like Bruce here and talk about big cams, but we used to ignore that. I mean, you know, things would run cold, especially ones we had turned up and the timing backed off on. That did sit there and slobber all over the place while they were cold. And we never gave it a second thought. Now some of my guys in the shop panic. They went in here with a little bit of a slobber coming from the joint and the manifold, and they're all upset. I'm like, well, that happens. You know, it's there.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you said that, because even the, you know, D-Deck 2s and 3s, this was a really, really common thing on those. And I used to get this call at least once a week when, you know, we were running before all the newer engines. I would get this call constantly, and that's how we started matching up the oil samples when they had the problem. And it was almost always fuel. I mean, it was. You know, it was such a common thing. And you're right, we just don't see it as much now, but when we do, people panic.
Oh, yeah, it used to be really common. And yeah, you're right. If you've got injector refueling, it could be a problem. You end up with fuel in your oil, and you'll see that there. And like I said, the quick way to chase it down is just pull a manifold off and run it.
Just good old school troubleshooting there.
You got it.
There you go. All right, let's head off to Ohio. Herschel, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Well, I'm going to stay with the old school theory. All the rage today is the single one exhaust down underneath. My truck's a Columbia mid-roof, and it's got the double stacks up the back. I do have the Pittsburgh Power mufflers, although they're 5 years old, so I don't know how much longer they're going to live. And all the pipe isn't bad, but it's looking that way. Am I better for breathability of the engine, economy, power, those kind of factors to stay with the double, or switch it and put the one down underneath?
John, I have a theory.
I'm all for keeping it simple and just putting the one underneath. I think you've got way more than enough flow. If not, I'm fine with the single underneath. Now, on my personal truck, I had a Peterbilt 377 that had an old mechanical cat in it, and it was all arrowed out, and it had all the skirting on it and everything, and it was, you know, for today, it was really, really advanced. And I drilled big holes in the skirts and put big stacks on it because I like the way they looked. So it's all what you want. But, you know, from a performance standpoint, I think you're better off. I think you're actually better off with the single underneath.
Okay.
Bingo.
Good enough. That's what I was wondering. Thank you.
Yeah, John, I was saying that for years, that all the complication with the, you know, it didn't make a whole lot of sense to me to come out of one manifold and then at some point in the system split out to two exhaust pipes. It's weight, it's complication, and I just didn't think we could be picking up that much flow. And I always said the shorter and straighter we can keep that exhaust with a nice, simple, single exhaust, exhausting out the bottom, keep as many bends out of it as we can, we're going to get the best flow, and it's going to be simple and inexpensive.
Yeah, I think when the volume of the plumbing just gets too large, I think you end up having to push the stuff out. I think that the velocity, I'd have to do some, you know, thought on that. It would be, you know, would really be splitting hairs here. But I've got a feeling that there's some extraction with the single, you know, keeping the velocity at a certain speed inside the pipe probably helps it along rather than breaking off into the two. And you see some of these got the great big ones. I know for a fact those things have got to actually flow worse than the smaller ones. They get noisy, but you know that the exhaust is stalled in there. It's cooling rapidly, and you know all sorts of stuff is going on that you know I don't think you want it to do. Again, I'd have to do some more research on it, but from you know other things I've learned, I know on the race cars you go too big on the exhaust pipe, it actually hurts it. So you need to keep some velocity in there.
And that was what we found, you know, over a lot of years of, you know, you go a little bigger on the exhaust and you get better flow, but at some point it got worse. The flow went in the other direction. And that was kind of my thought behind, you know, I get it. If you have two manifolds, you know, you want two exhaust systems, but if you only have one, it never made sense to me to split it off and try to push it out through two And it just, like I said, it's more complication, more weight, more cost. I have a formula somewhere, and I used to know it by heart because we talked about it all the time, but with DPFs and everything, it's just not nearly as relevant as it used to be. But there is a formula for exhaust flow, and for every improvement you make, there's a measurable improvement in fuel economy. And you've got to make a pretty big change in order to see a significant change in fuel economy. So when we got down into, you know, some of the low numbers that we were getting, improving it a little more just wasn't worth it. It wasn't even a noticeable improvement in fuel economy. And if we were seeing any improvement with the twin stack, and I'm not sure we were seeing any improvement, it wasn't enough to see a noticeable difference in fuel economy.
I could believe that for sure. Yeah, it's like I've got a bell curve theory on everything in life. I mean, it's some is good, more is better, and then too much, it goes the other direction. It happens with everything you do. It's just I think on the exhaust philosophy, I think, you know, well placed. I think if you get the outlet of the exhaust, you know, here I am being too techie, but if you get it somewhere where there's a low pressure and you can get some extraction, I think you could actually, you know, make a big improvement that way, way more than you're going to with any kind of stack. So it's, you know, I think that if the pipe were placed, the outlet were placed in, you know, somewhere where there's a low pressure, it would actually help pull the exhaust through.
But I was
that's me.
Yeah, well, no, I was that's in the Freightliner. I was in the Freightliner dealer here in Portland when I first moved out here, and I'm just walking around looking at parts and looking at stuff, and I saw this exhaust tip, you know, like a turnout kind of thing. But what they did was they took and they cut the 360-degree circle. They cut 180 degrees on the backside off of it. And I'm looking at it like, what is that for? And I stood there and I looked, and there wasn't any signs. There wasn't any documentation. And the longer I looked, I thought, I think I know what they were doing. And I went and researched it. They were claiming that when you only had the front 180 degrees on the stack, that it would create a vacuum right around that, which makes sense. That's what happens on the trailer at the back. That's why we have all those aerodynamic treatments. But they were claiming that there was actually some negative air pressure there that would help pull the exhaust out of the pipe.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Interesting.
There were one more race car thing. There was a car called an Indy Lights car, which had a Buick V6 in it. And these little formula cars have what's called a diffuser on the bottom, or an underwing, they call it in England. But it's the floor is completely smooth, and then it upsweeps at the back to create a negative pressure, which creates downforce. So while the Lola race car company that built this thing would run the header straight out through the diffuser, and it created a big negative pressure and yanked the exhaust out of the engine. And it was worth the horsepower. It made a big difference. And it put it right into there. What the unintended consequence was, it really affected the handling of the cars, or whether you're filling the diffuser up with exhaust or not. So you'd get out of the throttle and the thing would make more downforce than it did while you were on it. And it was tricky to drive. But, you know, there's science behind that. That's something that actually happens. So, yeah. So some of these weed burners we do, I think if the outlet's in the right spot, we could put it somewhere where there's a negative pressure, and it could actually help draw the exhaust out.
Interesting thought. Let's keep moving along. Let's start this call. We'll probably have to carry it through the break. Rod in Oregon. Let's get started. We'll carry you through the break. Go ahead.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yep. Go ahead.
Sure can.
Hey, I got an appointment with, I talked to Pittsburgh Power on the phone about doing some work on this truck. And part of it, most of it has to do with the after treatment system. Now, I got to the point where I had to finally stop last week and get the diesel particulate filters. They pulled them out and they cooked them and cleaned them out and did the flow test, and they came out real good, and they put them back in. And I did that because I was getting a whole buttload of, you know, those codes coming up. I mean, I was getting them like 5, 6, 7 at a time. Check engine light coming on, engine wanting to defuel, then it would like finally clear itself up. So I finally had the filters cleaned, but I'm still getting a few coats. And,
okay, hold that thought. Let's get to a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about that right around the corner. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got John and Ethan with me from Pittsburgh Power, and we're talking with Rod about some deep EF issues. So, John, Ethan, go ahead, guys.
Well, let's let him finish up there.
Okay. So I'm still getting some fault codes, and the main one that's coming up now is the airflow. And the airflow sensor. Now, there's a element before the fuel filter, or maybe it's after. I don't know what the way it flows. I think it's before. Is that where the airflow filter is? It looks like the actual filter element, but it's not. They were calling it something else. What is that?
Airflow filter.
There on. Don't know.
You got a regular old air filter on the way into the engine, and then you have what's called the outlet. The first thing the exhaust goes through is called a DOC, and that's a straight through catalyst. And then it goes through the DPF, which is more of a matrix that catches soot.
Okay,
and then it goes through the DOC. Yeah. So the DOC was you having plugging on that?
They didn't pull that off. All they did was blow it out. And I'm just wondering
if that's
the proper way to do it.
Did they take the DPF off the back of it and then just blow back through the DOC? Is that how they did it?
Yes.
Okay. And did they cook the DPF?
Yes.
Okay.
It went from a flow rate of one of them was at 3.8 and the other one was at 4, and they brought them down to 2.3, which they said was the optimal reading. And put it back together, and off I go.
Okay, but you're still having the same codes?
Just one or two codes now, where before I was having 5, 6, and 7 of them. I was having like inlet temperature, outlet temperature, mid temperature, NOx reading, DPF quality, or DEF quality, and, you know, they're just false codes. That's
well, they are and they're not. So if some of those codes are legit, could be what caused the other problem. So you have a knock-on effect from each of them. So if something's not right or not happy, it'll throw off how it's fueling for the regen. Everything affects something else.
Yeah, I visualize
so,
that.
Yeah, yep.
So
where are you? Can you get in here?
Well, I got an appointment with you middle of July, I think on the 17th.
Okay.
And I just couldn't wait that long to cook these. I had to finally do something with them filters. I was wanting to get into you guys, but it deteriorated. But I want you to do the service where you clean up all the sensors and whatnot. Now, is that going to help me out? And my main question is that DOC. Does that need to be addressed? Does it need to be pulled out? And how do we, does that thing need to be cooked out, or is it possible to cook them out, or how do we maintain that?
Well, here's what we'll do. We'll check the other codes, and we'll hopefully solve them. We'll clean everything. We'll check all the sensors. We'll see what's causing the codes that you've got. We'll get it to where it's running the way it's supposed to. Then we're going to go outside and do a regen on it, and then we'll look at the numbers while we're regenning, and that'll tell us if the DOC and the DPF need to be cleaned. So once we have everything else working properly, the cleaning that they just did on them should probably be adequate, and it probably won't deteriorate any more in the next couple of month or so till you get here. So the process will be, we'll do the maintenance on it. We'll pull it outside. We'll do a regen on it. we could watch all the numbers while it regens. It'll tell us the health of the DOC and the DPF, and then we'll make a judgment call after that.
Okay, good enough on that. Now, I'm going to have you guys put a soot trap on here, too. You got it for this DD-15?
The DD-15, oh, yeah, that's an easy one. Yep.
All right, that was the first one we did. I'll bring it to you in July.
I've got four of them on the bench right now. I think two of them are spoken for that I've got to get out, but I'll have more done by then, by the time you get here in July. Okay?
There you go. We're off to Washington. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
What can we help today?
Well, Kevin, I talked to you the other day about I put that bypass, the spinner 2 on my ISX, and I was wondering about having pulling off of the a little port on the filter, oil filter housing, and you said maybe we could ask the guys at Pittsburgh Power about that.
Yeah, I thought it was okay as long as we had flow, but I wanted to run this by you guys.
Yeah, at the oil filter housing, though, that should be full flow. You should have all the oil pressure you're going to have anywhere there.
Okay. So, yeah, and you know, it's warming up and everything, so I'm sure it's getting oil. I just wanted to be sure that that was, because I couldn't find any info on it, so just thought I'd ask.
Won't the LED on there tell you if you don't have oil flow?
Well, see, this is an old one.
Oh, okay.
I got it for free.
Okay.
So I thought, you know, I like free stuff.
Oh, that's the best kind. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I asked the guy who used to build my transmissions for the race team. I said, hey, what kind of oil do you want me to use? He said, the best kind you get for free. I'm like, Valvoline it is. So that was it. It was over.
Right.
There you go.
But I also had a question for you guys because I only run the Northwest and Alaska. So I've never got a chance when I was out on the road to get back to you guys. So I was wondering, I've heard that you have some remote tuning places around the country. Do you have anything up here in the Northwest?
We do. We've got a guy in Oregon, actually. Bill Harlow. Humbug Creek, he calls his business. Call in and you ask anybody here, they'll give you the number. I think we may also have them listed on our website, but he's right on I-5 somewhere in Southern Oregon.
Oh, nice.
Bill is a longtime listener as well.
Yeah, he's actually coming in this week. I think he'll be here tomorrow. He's going to be around, but yeah, he's on the road a lot, but if you catch him at home, he'll take care of you.
Well, perfect. What's his name again? Well, thank you, guys.
Bill Harlow.
Bill Harlow. Okay.
Yep. All right. We're going to try to squeeze in another one before we've got to get out of here. We're off to Iowa. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Let me first start off by saying I've got an appointment booked through Eric there next Wednesday. I'm having that injector issue that seems to go away. I want to add injector fluid. Do you have my fuel gauges available?
I can bring it up while we're talking. So go ahead and I'll start looking it up.
Okay, June 2nd, I had some sputtering going when the engine cooled. I get back on the highway and I got 6 miles per gallon. And I dumped one bottle for a full tank. And the fuel economy went up to 8 and slowly went back down. Then when it got to 6.15, I can't see the date, June 14th, my engine actually backfired when I got I parked, got on the highway, I had no fuel response, and when I took it out of gear, it dropped to idle and then backfired and cleared out. So I put in another bottle, and it got up to 8.16. And since then, I've been putting in 40 ounces for every 120 gallons of fuel I buy. And the fuel economy is ridiculous, like almost 9 miles per gallon on this last pull-up. So I'm trying to figure out, I mean, do I have an injector issue, or is it some... Like, does it just need cleaning?
That's quite a swing. That's pretty amazing. Yeah, it's a big jump.
I'm looking at the numbers here in fuel gauges, and I mean, it is a distinct line. You know, we were seeing 6s, 7s, 1.8, you know, in the last month, and then all of a sudden, when you talked about it, June 15th, we went to 8.16. June 18th, 8.33, and June 20th, 9.15. I mean, that's a clear demarcation line there. And, you know, John, I don't know if you and I have ever talked about this or not, but I have tested fuel additive after fuel additive for years and years and years, and I have never found a fuel additive that consistently improves fuel economy. We see some cleaning go on in the beginning and things get better, but I haven't found any fuel additive that's worth putting in every tank that actually improves fuel economy in any significant measure. But this is a pretty big swing here.
Yeah, that's crazy. What do you mind saying? What is it that you put in there?
The diesel 9-11 injector cleaner, the gray bottle. So it's like $11 worth of product. And I think it's giving me an extra 200 miles on a tank of fuel. So like this one here, I left Seattle and I'm on my way to Virginia, Richmond. So I'll have one more fill up at 100 gallons and I'll add another $11 in there. But I've been pushing my luck thinking, you know, I had an injector issue. I've been booking light loads. This is a 15,000 pound load. So, you know, if everything was perfect, I would be expecting 7.5. And I don't understand. I'm pretty sure I have an injector issue because I'm losing a little bit of coolant. I'd say about a quart every 10,000 miles. I have no leaks.
Okay. What kind of engine is it?
You know, we're going to have to wrap this up. I think we can come back to this question in the next episode because this is a kind of a little bit of a mystery. But when the clock says I've got to go, I've got to go. So we will see you next time. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to John and Ethan from Pittsburgh Power. This is the Power Hour. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy always. Do the hard work and master the journey. All right, we're going to start a second hour. And Dave, we are going to come back to you right at the beginning. So hold on. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. Today is the Power Hour. I've got John and Ethan with me from Pittsburgh Power doing all the heavy lifting. I'll push the buttons and we'll take your calls and answer your questions about everything maintenance, engines, performance, fuel mileage, modifications, upgrades, troubleshooting, electrical, emissions, new technology, you name it. We'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and ask the question. John and Ethan, welcome back, guys.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, Kevin. Good to be here.
Yeah. So, John, I don't know if this is something you and I have ever talked about or not. You know, the whole idea of a fuel additive being marketed as improving fuel economy. And this stems from a call we had at the end of the show last time. We're going to bring him back on because he used a fuel additive and we saw really consistent kind of crazy increases in fuel economy. And the product he used isn't one that's marketed as, you know, right, put it in all the time and get better fuel economy. It's a cleaner. And I've said that that works. I mean, I've seen results from those kind of things, but it's almost like a one-time thing. You know, the engine, the injectors are dirty over time. We clean it with the product like this, we see an increase, but it doesn't make sense to keep putting it in.
No, I mean, my personal Dodge pickup truck that's 2005 with 250,000 miles on it, every 15,000 miles or so, it'll start picking up a little miss at idle. It's got the original injectors in it. And I put a little bit of the only one I found that works. I guess I'm going to give someone a plug here, but and I've tried everything. The only one that works is the Power Service Diesel Clean. I put Diesel Clean in the tank full after my truck has a miss, and the next key cycle I drive it, the miss is gone and stays gone for the next 10 or 15,000 miles. So my feeling is on this truck that's seeing this improvement is it's a maintenance item. He's got either, and again, I think I asked him right at the end what it was, and we didn't pick up on that. But if it's one of the common rail engines, those injectors have what they call spill valves in them. And I think he's probably got a spill valve that's not sealing up or hanging up in one of the injectors, not enough to set a code. But it's I think it's a maintenance item. I think there's something wrong that the additive is fixing. And if we got to the bottom of the problem, the additive would probably not be necessary to get his fuel mileage back.
Yeah, and we're going to bring him back on so we can get some of those things cleared up. But, you know, my thought on this when I did the research, you know, we've got 150 gallons of fuel in here, and these products are adding ounces sometimes. There just doesn't seem to be any logic behind how a couple ounces or even, you know, a quart of something could really give us more energy to burn. Because that's really what we're talking about. A certain amount of energy.
There's X amount of energy per pound of fuel, and it's measured in BTUs. And unless whatever this thing you put in increased that number of BTUs per pound, it's not what's doing it. There's no way. It's just like I can't see how that happens. Unless, again, it's fixing something, right?
Yeah. This is one of those things that I get hounded. It's not quite as bad as propane and hydrogen, but I get hounded by people with fuel additives. Everybody swears theirs works. And no matter how many times I go through the logic and the science, they just look at me like, well, you must be wrong because mine works. And we test them over and over and over. And many times we've actually seen a slight decrease in fuel economy, which probably isn't the product because that doesn't make sense either. But it's just the you know, how many variables there are in fuel mileage testing, but we have never found a consistent increase in fuel economy by putting a product in every tank of fuel.
I agree. Yeah. I can't see how that would be. It's physics. It's not, you know, it's that simple. You know, it's BTUs per pound. And unless you've somehow increased that, and a diesel engine will respond. I mean, if you somehow figure out a way to increase the energy per pound of fuel, the engine will automatically use less. That's just how a diesel works. That would be fine. But, you know, unless that few ounces of stuff you put in there did that somehow via magic, it's not going to do it. It's not going to do what you say.
Yeah, you know, I the line I always use on these guys, because they're all so serious, and they just swear up and down, and they want to fight, they want to argue, and I'll say, look, you just said it, but I add a little to it. I said, look, this is just physics, guys. And physics haven't changed in a really long time. And they
no,
all give me that kind of deer in the headlights look.
Let's ask Sir Isaac Newton about this.
Yeah, right. Yeah. All right. Well, let's go ahead.
Oh, good. Those laws are very, very, very strict and very strong. Yeah. They don't change. Nope.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's bring Dave back on and go through some of that. Dave, what do you think?
Well, I agree with you. I don't believe that bottles, you know, it's like snake oil and stuff, but I'm not trying to sell anything. I mean, I put
this
in my tank,
no.
And this is what I'm getting, and I don't understand it. I got a half a bottle left, which will do another 120 gallons. And then I'm not going to add any more, and hopefully it sputters when I get to Pittsburgh Power next Wednesday. I'm running 15,000 pounds to North Carolina, and then because of freight rates where they are this week, I don't know why they're so high, I pushed my luck, and I got another light load going to Chicago, and then another light load, 6,000 pounds, going to Tremont, PA, and I'm deadheading over.
Okay, sounds good.
I don't know. That doesn't make sense to you, huh?
What engine is it? What that'll give me a little more info on what goes on in it.
The Series 60 12-7. I believe it's the original injectors. It's got 673,000 on it. And like I said, I don't know if you would say seized, but when the engine cooled and it took off when it got down to 6 miles per gallon, it backfired. And then I changed the fuel filter, which didn't need changing because it was only half full. And dump that bottle in, and then the fuel economy dropped again. and I just started adding, you know, 40 ounces every 100 gallons, and the fuel economy. I don't have the most fuel efficient looking truck with the skirts and everything, so to have 9 miles per gallon just doesn't make sense to me, even with a tailwind.
John, just to give you a history on the fuel economy on this truck, he's been really good. He's been tracking on fuel gauges for 125,000 miles total, and that lifetime average is 6.85. The 90-day average, the last 90 days, is 6.88. The last 60, 6.94. That's a pretty common trend. The weather's getting better and better, so we see the fuel economy go up. The 30-day is at 7.13. I mean, that history doesn't surprise me at all. It's, you know, kind of a nice little, but we really went from 6.8 to 7.1. You know, lifetime to the last 30 days. It's a 4/10, not bad, but nothing that would shock me. But then all of a sudden, the last two fuel ups, and this is over a total of 2,000 miles, so these were both long fuel ups, we have, and if we go back 3,000 miles, 0.16, 8.33, and 9.15. I mean, that's just bizarre.
Yeah, that's strange. Yeah. Yeah, that's... I don't know. Any thoughts on
it's
that?
It's an odd pattern there.
In the last 125,000 miles, the truck never registered a 9 mile per gallon tank, ever, until now.
Right.
So when I bring it in, we'll be able to measure the injectors to find if something's wrong with them?
We'll be able to test the solenoids and do a cylinder cutout test.
Yeah, we'll see if there's a weak one. I wonder if I'm just thinking, if for some reason it's underfueling, man, yeah, this thing could maybe teach us something. I'd be curious to see what's going on with it. I mean, he's at that age with the injectors of the Detroit where you've got to start thinking about them. I mean, I've seen some go a million miles, but the performance usually starts falling off somewhere, I don't know, between 600,000 and 700,000. But, you know, if the flow's actually down on them.
Well, and the other thing
that's a tough one.
The boost gauge is not showing as much boost as it normally would. Does that have
anything
to do with
it? You're not getting as much fuel. Yeah, it's under fueling for some reason. There's less fuel getting into the engine.
But yeah, that would indicate it's under fueling. Why would we see such an increase fuel economy when it's under fueling? Is just bizarre.
I don't know. Maybe you've been right all along, Kevin.
Well, I don't know.
Before Bruce brainwashed you. Yeah.
Well, I'd love to get this one in and let you guys do a little detective work. Dave, stay in touch. I'm gonna actually tag your truck, and I'm gonna follow to see where this goes, and we'll see what we might be able to learn from this one. That's interesting. You know, if I see one tank, it's a fluke. You had a big tailwind. You're light. Everything just went right, but we're looking at 3,000 miles and three fuel ups. That's pretty consistent. That's, you know, definitely starting to show a pattern, and the truck's never done that. We'll be right back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got John and Ethan with me. We're going to get back to the phone calls. We're off to Pennsylvania. Ken, welcome to the program.
Oh, good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
Never mind. Problem. I have what I consider a pump in my engine. It does it at idle. If I put it in first gear or low gear, as I'm moving, it feels like it's surging. I can feel it at high speed, at low speed. I normally run between 68 and 72, and that's about where it fades out, but you kind of get a little feel of it. But the colder it gets, the worse it gets. I'm wondering if I'm looking at an injector.
And it surges.
Yes.
I wonder if there's getting air in the fuel.
It's either air or... What type of engine is it?
It's a 2002 build, 60 series.
Okay.
The 470 is set to a 430 right now.
Okay. Do you have a boost gauge on it?
No, I do not have a boost gauge. I have to use the stand gauge boost gauge. But even
okay.
at that, I'm having a problem with the stock turbo.
It has the stock turbo on it?
Yeah, it has the stock turbo, but the wastegate actuator went out on it. I ordered one offline. It's the wrong one. It used to build up to 36 PSI. Now it'll only do between 23 and 25, depending on how it feels. And I had another gentleman, another shop look at it, and he noticed that the wastegate interfly is sticking. I can still build boost, but yesterday I came across Maryland on I-68. And even though I'm only 6,000 pounds, I was down to 43 mile an hour trying to pull a hill.
Yeah, that's understandable. That surge could also be from the turbo as well, especially if you've got a malfunctioning turbo actuator.
Yeah, with the wastegate stuck open.
Yeah, yep. But you got to get that straightened out for sure. And keep an eye on that turbo boost when it does the surge.
Okay.
Yeah, keep an eye on that and see what it does when this is going on.
Okay. Well, I do have an appointment out in Kansas City over at T&E to have one of your turbos put on and a new radiator put in because we know the turbo's going. And we're hoping it's something related to the turbo, so we don't have to turn around and go through and do injectors immediately after that. Could the overhead have anything to do with it? Because it's been
pay attention.
Yeah, that's pay attention. Uh-oh. Yeah, I can't go that way.
Hey, Kevin, have we ever had anyone crash while they were talking on the show?
Hey.
Well, I didn't crash. I almost made a wrong turn.
My attorney said it's going to be all right.
So, that sounds like a plan. Okay, yeah, get in there to T&E and do the turbo. Really, I'll do the manifold too. It really does make a difference. Other than being more durable, it flows better. It spools up a little quicker, especially with our turbo, and that allows it tells the computer to feel it a little harder. And what happens is it results in horsepower and better flow and better mileage as well. So yeah, look into doing the manifold and the turbo together. And they are one of our remote dealers, so. You know, they could plug in and check for codes and see what's going on and do a cylinder balance test and make sure that, you know, you can kind of check the health of the injectors that way. They also should have the ability there to check for air. The only thing, other thing that would cause an issue like you've got is probably air in the fuel. So make sure that, you know, you've got a good clean flow of fuel making its way to the fuel pump. And that should be pretty good. But yeah, get over there as soon as possible and get that taken care of. And I think we're going to solve the problem when we get that wastegated turbo off of there with the malfunctioning wastegate.
There you go. We're off to Virginia. Tom, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good.
Good.
All right, I have two questions. One's tax related and the other one is, I guess it's for the guys at Pittsburgh Power. So what do you guys want to tackle first?
Let's do the truck question first, and then I'll tackle the taxes.
Okay. I would change my oil and my differentials about a few weeks ago, and I had a lot of metal in the old oil, and the mechanic said it's probably time to get them replaced. I mean, the truck's got 1.7 million on it, and I think they're original. So I was wondering if I should go with a lower ratio number, just so I can maybe get better fuel economy. I mean, right now I have an 18-speed, supposedly they're 355 rears, and I have 255, 70, 22.5 tires. And at 70, I'm around 1,700 RPMs, and it's a Cat C15 6NZ.
Yeah, it's 70. Do you run 70 a lot?
Yeah, usually 67. I set the cruise and usually 67, 68.
355 is kind of a middle of the road, pretty generic. You know, running 60 to 65, they'd be, I would say it's probably not worth changing, although you're changing anyway. I mean, with an 18 speed and a 6NZ, I would go all the way to 264s and start running it in direct at, you know, 60 to 65 and 12th gear at 65 to 70 and 13th gear when the cops are chasing in, you don't want to stop.
Okay. I usually run 80,000 gross. So, and I do Pennsylvania a lot. So, do you think 264 would be too low? Maybe I should go something higher than that? Or?
Well, no. Just so we keep it clear, that's a higher ratio, lower number, higher ratio. But the thing is that, you know, when we talk about, you know, 390s pulling well and 264s not, when people say that, they're missing the whole point, that the entire drivetrain is gearing. You've got the transmission first, the differentials next, and then the tires. And every one of those changes the overall gear to the ground. And any time you downshift, you've just overcome that high ratio. So when we put a high ratio like a 264, but we run it in direct, it actually pulls better. That you're putting the power directly to the ground. So I know there's always that thought that, well, the high ratio won't pull. Well, as soon as you put it into a lower gear, it's no longer a high ratio anymore. So, John, any thoughts on that?
I'm with you on this 100%, Kevin. I'd go straight, especially with the 6NZ and the 18 speed, put the 264s, and that's short rubber too, isn't it? 22.5s with 70, yeah. 70 series.
So yeah,
that's pretty short. So you've got that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'd go straight to the 264s. You've got the 18 speed, you've got the low first, you've got the ability to split the bottom side, which you probably skip over now. If you needed to, you had those gears to use. I see no problem at all with the 264, and you get to run it in direct. Yeah, so that's if you look inside of a transmission and see how it works with the auxiliary shafts and everything, and watch the load path there, it's a big deal being able to put it in direct. When you put it in direct, there's a what they call a clutch ring that basically attaches the input shaft to the output shaft. So all the gears are just spinning on there freely with very little, if no drag. The load path doesn't go through the two auxiliary shafts and then back out the back. It's a big deal. So there's a whole lot, you know, you're a lot more efficient being able to run the thing in direct. And yeah, if you want to go 100 mile an hour too, you could do that. So you've got everything.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I mean,
Hello?
I told the mechanic, yeah, I'm here.
Yep.
I told the mechanic I want to go, I guess, higher ratio, lower number, and they said you shouldn't go lower than 342 because then you're not going to be able to, you know.
No, you're splitting hairs there. You're not even going to notice that. Yeah.
Yeah. We almost can't even measure the RPM difference on a traditional tack. We almost have to have a digital tack to be able to see the difference. That's so close. And mechanics who make statements like that just drive me crazy. Because again, you know, I understand when a driver may not get the whole gearing thing through the entire drivetrain. But for a mechanic, if they don't know any better, they should just keep their mouth shut. Really, because that's just an ignorant statement to make.
Yeah, that's, yep.
Now, would I can I just plug that straight in, or would I need to change anything in the driveline?
Hold that thought. We'll come back. We'll talk about that right after this. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got John and Ethan with me, and we are talking to Tom in Virginia. Tom, you don't need to change anything else. In fact, just like John was saying, you've got the ideal setup already to go to the 264s. Tons of horsepower and torque on that engine, the 18-speed. You are ideally set up. Drop those gears in, start running in direct, and maybe 12th, or not 12th, 17th, occasionally, and you're going to see better performance and better fuel economy, and the truck runs quieter in direct as well.
Now, you said direct's going to be in 13th gear?
No, I was thinking of, it's 16 is direct, 17 is your first overdrive, 18 is your final.
All right, so I guess the tax question is next.
John, did you have something else you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, he was asking before, but you could just drop them in. You'll have to exchange the pumpkins. Yours, you won't be able to just put the gears in. That's going to be a different housing to accommodate the larger pinion gear. So they won't be able to get the pinion or the placement of the ring gear correct for the big pinion gear with the 264s with the housings you have. So I don't think, you know, your average Eaton dealer is going to have a problem taking yours as exchanges, but you might want to look into it, you know, whoever you're talking to about the rears.
Oh, so I need a new housing.
Yeah, well, not the housing, just the pumpkin itself, just the what we call the pig. So you wouldn't be able to rebuild yours with those gears is the point I'm making. You need a whole exchange unit to put in there.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's what I was planning. Yeah. They're just swap in a new pumpkin or whatever you call it.
Right. You won't be able to have yours rebuilt with those gears in it, was the point I was trying to make.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
All right. What's
All
the
right,
tax
so
question?
Kevin, real quick tax question. A few months ago, I switched my company over to Pennsylvania because I was paying $30,000 for insurance, and now that dropped down to around $18,000. And I just want to know, can I, for tax, when it comes time to file my taxes, can I file the business in Pennsylvania and my personal in New Jersey, or do I have to also do it in Pennsylvania?
Well, I was going to ask you if your insurance was that expensive, it had to be New York or New Jersey, and it's New Jersey. So this is a corporation, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, LLC.
Yeah, so this is going to get a little complicated. It's probably still worth it for you just because of that giant drop in insurance cost. But technically, you are what's considered a foreign corporation operating out of New Jersey. Even though you filed as a corporation in Pennsylvania, you are operating out of New Jersey. So, and that's common because if you take big corporations, they're headquartered in one state, but they file and operate sometimes in all 50. You're operating in a different state. So you are considered a domestic corporation in Pennsylvania, but because you're operating in New Jersey, you still have to file a tax return in New Jersey, and you have to file as a foreign corporation doing business in New Jersey. Shouldn't have any major implications other than just doing some paperwork. And like I say, it's probably still worth it because of that big drop in insurance. But I would make sure, and I would start doing it now. This is a great time to if you don't have a good tax preparer, find one, talk to them about this now, because they're doing next to nothing this time of year. So you'll get their attention. I wouldn't wait until January and start talking to them then, but they'll be able to work this out and they'll be able to tell you if there are any real negative consequences to this. I don't think there should be. And that was a $12,000 savings on insurance. Let's go to Ohio. Daryl, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Got a question about the Optima batteries, which one to switch to. I've got AGM batteries now, but I was wanting to get them replaced. They're getting weak.
Okay, so I like the yellow tops on the Optimas. So, and I should go back and look, because I haven't talked about this in a while, and sometimes I get confused. The yellow top is what they consider their deep cycle, right? And the red is their, and the blue is their, has more cold cranking amps. Is that correct?
I think that's what I saw on it. I've got the start module also.
Okay, excellent. So, and this is the combination I really like. They have three colors, and basically one has more cold cranking amps. One has more amp hours and is more of a deep cycle. And then one is supposed to be a true deep cycle. I think that's the red. But there isn't enough difference between the red and the yellow. The yellow is the best option. Run the start module and three or four of the yellow top. And that's really about the best combination I've found, other than going to a lithium ion, which is starting to become almost an option on price.
All right. All right. Another question on, I've got a Mercedes motor. I know you don't like him, but I don't have a boost gauge, but off the scan gauge, I used to max out that 31.5 at about 75% on the load on the motor. And now I'm only producing like about 27.4 on the boost on that now. And I've had the air to air checked and the turbo's been checked and they haven't been able to find anything wrong.
Well, so quite often it's
that
fuel.
Might possibly be an overhead.
It could possibly be an overhead. I'm not at all familiar with that engine, but check fuel delivery as well. Make sure you don't have too much restriction or you're not getting any air in the fuel and you don't have a clogged fuel filter, because it takes fuel and burning fuel to spool the turbo and make the boost. So if you're down on fuel delivery, you'll also see a decrease in boost.
And when they check the air-to-air, did they do the whole system as one, or did they just check the charged air cooler?
I checked the charged air cooler, then I had it in two shops. They also checked for air-to-air leaks.
But the whole intake system.
Less than a year ago, the air-to-air charger was just replaced not too long ago, too.
Okay. But the plumbing on the way to and from the engine, from the turbo to the intake, and just make sure everything in between, if you could pressurize the turbo inlet the whole way through the engine against the valves and pistons and see if you've got a leak in the manifold or somewhere else as well.
All right.
So, yeah, commonly boost leaks, not just at the air-to-air. I mean, we see them at, air compressor inlets and all over the place.
Blown intake manifold
gaskets. Intake manifold gaskets commonly. So it could be, somewhere else. So you might want to check the rest of the intake system for leaks. And then again, I'd also like to check fuel. Yeah, make sure you're getting good fuel delivery to the engine.
Sounds like a plan. Let's head off to New York. Tim, welcome to the program.
Hey guys, thanks for taking my call. How's it going today?
Good. What can we help you with?
Good.
All right. I got a 07 Freightliner. It's got a 14-liter Detroit. Guy before me took the emissions off of it. I think it's really, really cool. I hear you guys talking about 200-degree temps all the time. Mine constantly runs 175. Do I have the wrong thermostat in this?
Possibly.
Yeah, it depends on what was put in there last.
More likely you've got one hanging up. You probably have one that's not closing the whole way.
Yeah, 175 is a little low.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I mean, yeah, 135-ish. Okay, I mean, it's 96 degrees. I'm only got, like, 20,000 pounds behind me, around 65. And it's, right, like, 175, 180. So, okay, check them out.
Yeah, I'll check out the thermostat first. You know, I personally like to see them run a touch warm. I think there's some efficiency there to get it up around 190, but the problem is then keeping it cool, because it's a struggle to keep it cool afterwards. So we generally go with 180-degree thermostats here, and they should run right at 180. You know, so I don't mind seeing 190, you know, 195 on a pool, 200 even on a pool is not going to hurt it.
Okay, yeah, I mean, this, according to the previous owner, this truck was cranked up to 700 horse, got a different turbo and stuff like that. Yeah, it's actually a little higher than I want it to be, because my fuel mileage sucks. But, yeah, I'm looking to get some work done on this and just trying to figure out what to start with. I mean, this is my first Detroit. Before that, I came out of an ED15. Got 342 rears, 13 speed. You know, I'm just trying to figure out, where do you normally like to see the RPMs on these trucks just rolling down the road?
Hold that thought.
Which engine is it?
No. Let's get to the break. We'll come back. We'll talk about that right after this. Stick around. This is the Power Hour. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. Got John and Ethan with me. We're talking with Tim in New York. Tim, what engine is this?
It's a 13-liter Detroit 07.
Okay. It's a Series 60, 07? Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. That's a lot of power for one. That's pretty hot. I'm surprised it runs 14, that cool.
14-liter, right?
14.
Yeah, the 13 liter, they said.
14. Okay. That makes more sense.
EGR has been removed. Not by my choice, but I'm just trying to, you know, I want to turn it down, but what's a good number? 550, 600? I really don't haul super heavy very often.
Yeah, 550 to the ground would be a good conservative number for that.
Okay.
I mean, we could get it to 600, but yeah, you ought to bring it in, get on the dyno, and see what it's actually doing.
Okay. Now, would you guys be willing to touch this thing, not having the EGR on it, or is that something I'm going to do a phone call?
I've got no problem putting it on the dyno, and we could talk about that later.
Okay. All right. And
so, John, I would think that this horsepower and fuel mileage thing fits right into your bell curve theory, right?
Exactly. You got it.
Yeah.
Think about it, Kevin. It works.
it does work. It, you know, I was thinking we could do a whole show on this. You know, it wouldn't even have have anything to do with trucks. You just think about life and the bell curve. There might even be a book here.
I've got like 3 books rolling around in my head that I don't have time to even think about writing.
Yeah, well, I'm, you know, the end of writing a book right now, and it's my second, and it's just brutal. They are so much work and so much time, and I'd like to write 5 more, but it's a lot of work, and I don't write well. So I came up with a technique. I actually, obviously, I talk a lot, so I can talk better than I can write. And what I do is I just go into a room with an idea. I just record everything I can think of, and I have an employee who's an excellent writer. So it's kind of a joint venture to get the book out, because writing for me is just, I'd rather poke myself in the eye with a knitting needle than have to sit down and write that much.
It's torture for me. I struggle with it. Yeah, I really do. It's once I get rolling, I'm good. But the getting to that point to me is torture. It's really, really hard. Yeah. And if I have distractions or something pulls me away from it, or if I get yanked away before my complete train of thoughts out, it's really difficult. I really struggle with that. Yep. Hey, I'd like to know your thoughts. There are a lot of philosophies around the shop here on engine temperature, and I personally might not conform to all of them, but I'd like to see what your research has said about where an engine ought to run temperature-wise and things that you may have worked with.
You know, the number I got from Detroit many years ago was that for every 10 degree increase in engine temperature, there was a 2% increase in fuel economy. And so obviously we know it's more efficient, but where it's the bell curve thing again, you know, where do you find
it's going to go over, it's going to tip over at some point. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I mean, I get the Evans philosophy and everything, but you know, with our racing engines, it's, you know, 195, 200, you know, you want to be in that neighborhood. And, you know, I found even street going cars and such seem to be happiest in that around there. And I know we have other issues at play here. I mean, if we run a, you know, starting at 195, you get to a big hill with a big load on, you may have trouble keeping it cool if the system hasn't got the capacity to do that. But efficiency wise, you know, I really think we may be giving something up running at 180 or less.
Well, if we think about it, I think 200 is kind of the sweet spot. You know, 210 is starting to push things a little bit. And where you run into the problem is exactly what you said. If you have the truck running 200 to 210 all the time, now you get a heavy load, a hot day, and a big hill, and you're going to create a problem. Yes, but, you know, running at 180 compared to 200, that's 4% in fuel economy. I mean, 4%, I'm pretty excited when I can find 4% somewhere. We just have to find that balance of how hot can you run it without causing problems. But yeah, I'm with you. I think running around all the time at 170 or 180 is just not efficient.
No, absolutely not.
All right, so, let's get
okay,
to
you're with
more
me on that one. Good.
Yes, I am. Let's go to Illinois. Chad, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. Hey, Kevin, I noticed you all talking about fuel system cleaners. For the guys out there that still have the standard fuel filter on the front end up near the hood, if they're near an oil change and swapping the fuel filter, and they want to get back to their favorite shop and are starting to have issues, you can go grab that power service stuff when the guys were talking about earlier, the little 100 gallon, the small ball that's good for up to 100 gallons, pour half of that with the motor off in that fuel system and let it sit in there for a few minutes and then fire the motor back up, and you're good for the 3,000 miles before it starts spitting and sputtering again. I had to do that a couple years ago because the company didn't want to change the oil in the truck. It works.
Okay.
So pour the PS right into the Davco. So open the cap up on the Davco and dump the thing right in there.
Yeah. If you're pushing like the 30,000 miles on a since they've swapped all the filters out and the engine starts sputtering because that fuel filter is really clogged up, just go. It's like the small one, the one that says it's up to 100 gallons. They only sell two of them at the Pilots and Flying J's. Buy the small one. Shut the motor off, pour about half that bottle in there, tighten the cap back down, wait about 3 or 4 minutes, hit the key, and let it sit there and idle for about another 4 or 5 minutes, and you're good for another 3,000 miles to make it back to your favorite shop.
Interesting.
Good trick.
Came on.
Yeah. Huh.
My truck started spitting and sputtering. I'm like, okay, well, it's spitting and sputtering because the fuel filter's clogged up. Let's go grab the best fuel system cleaner I know of. So I grabbed that and it works. So for all the guys out there, that's a tip that you can use if you're close to a PM. You just want to wait till you get back to your favorite shot. Because me, I like Speedcos over everybody else. But, you know, everybody's, you know, I bake my cookies in a toaster oven. You do it in an oven at your house. You know, it's one of those type things. But it's a tip.
So hacks. These are called hacks. So we should have, yeah. Kevin, we should do a whole show. We should do a whole show on hacks. Let's get everybody to call in with their favorite hack, and let's do a show on hacks.
See, My grandfather had a big cam, and he told me one time his fuel filter was sputtered, was clogged up, and nobody had the fuel filter he needed out in Wyoming. He just went in there and bought a thing of transmission fluid, because you could still do that on the mechanical motors, on the big cams. And he said he would just douse it in transmission fluid, stick it back in there, and essentially do the same process I did. And he said it got him back to Kentucky. So,
well, transmission fluid does have a lot of detergency. It will remove some carbon and stuff. There's science behind that.
But can you run the transmission fluid on that nowadays with all these sensors and all the crap on these motors? Or will it cause the motor to essentially crap out?
It did probably get angry. I think it would dirty up a knock
sensor
for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's
if you did too much there.
Yeah, it wouldn't be happy with you at
all.
Yeah,
you don't want to crash and burn. That's for definitely sure. But I figured I'd throw that tip out there because I was like, hey, I need to get back to the shop and it works. So, you know.
Yeah, I like that one. And John, I like your idea of hacks, and you know, I think we could also see how far back we could go and remember some of the old hacks we used to do a long time ago. I'm trying to remember some that my dad taught me from. And he actually was the one that taught me the automatic transmission fluid. Back in the mechanical engines, used to work really well to keep things clean, and there didn't really seem to be any downside to it on those engines.
No, it shouldn't have bothered them at all. Those things would burn anything.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, you know, I remember, you know, and you know, my dad was on and off owner operator. You know, he'd run a truck until he ran out of money, and then go back to work for somebody else until he could save enough money to buy another truck again. But you know, he would talk about, you know, back then with true mechanical governors, and you know, the guys would come up with any way they could to get a little more power or speed out of them, vice grips on return fuel lines, and you know, all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yep. All sorts of them. Old mechanics always have them too. Yeah, we could have a whole show dedicated to that. So with the new 2-hour format, we could play around with some things like that, or have segments or guest callers, or who knows what. That we've got a lot we could work with now.
Yeah, I like that. There's some cool ideas. Going back's always fun, looking at what we used to do, but you know, ideas now. You know, Bruce was always really good when him and I first started talking. We would talk a lot about, you know, the troubleshooting kind of stuff. And you mentioned one, you know, running without the manifold and checking for fuel. Those kind of things are always interesting as well. Some of them still work today. So the music's playing. We've got to get out of here, but I love that idea. Maybe we'll put something together. Thanks, everybody, for joining us today. Thanks to John and Ethan from Pittsburgh Power. And we'll do it again soon. We'll see you next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Good night, everyone. All right, we'll see you back here tomorrow for Destination Health.